Pikachu, Jesse and James, prepare for double trouble. We'll take a bow to the notorious couple. Step back, or I will attack, cause I ain't never been afraid of a Pokemon matcher. Get the sound for the first round, and we're getting down on a standby. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, whatever it is, whenever you're listening. This is Pika P Podcast, the show where we're going through every single episode of Pokemon to give it a second look, or a third, fourth, 15th, 27th. We don't judge here. It is Pika P Podcast, and it is the 4th of July, so hopefully my neighbors will not set off any fireworks as I'm recording. So getting to the episode 13, Mystery at the Lighthouse, the narrator's opening line for this episode is, well, here's a familiar scene, meaning, yes, Ash, Brock, and Misty are lost again. I'm not sure, but it seems that this particular group spends a whole lot of time lost. I'm not sure if that's because they haven't got a Pokénav or a Pokétech yet, or if they haven't figured out that Brock should be leading instead of Ash, or if the three of them together are just that directionally challenged. I'm fairly sure that if we did a tally, the Ash-Brock-Misty trio would probably average out most episodes spent lost per season than any other group. But we need to talk about the unidentified League badges in the background. While the narrator's doing his spiel, the background shows a bunch of gym badges, which isn't too remarkable until you realize that most of them, if not all of them, are the ones you can't get in the games. We don't know what they are. Likely, the animators were just having fun, as some of them look like Wemyss signs, but this gives us a chance to talk about Kanto's gym system and why it's a mess. In fact, a lot of things in Kanto are a mess, and this episode will probably show a bit of that, too. So, Ash, without fail, always collects all the badges that are in the games, every region. However, as we've seen from this opening shot, there are other badges available. And he's run into trainers who have caught other badges. As we learned from AJ in Episode 8, unofficial gyms and their badges do not qualify you for the Pokemon League. But as long as the gyms are official, it doesn't seem to matter which 8 badges you get. Which makes sense when you think that nobody was defeating Sabrina there for a while, and nobody could even find Blaine's gym, yet people were still able to compete at Indigo. So the anime suggests that there are other official gyms than the ones in the games, and at other locations. Probably the most memorable is, Gary, there are 8 badges and I caught 10, Oak. Gary, you can't have a podcast episode without mentioning my name, Oak. Who, yes, only needed 8 badges to compete and he decided to just go get 10. Good job, Gary. Only 3 of those are ones you can get in the games. And also, a trainer named Otoshi shows off his badges during the League arc, and only 4 are the same as Ash, though some of them seem similar to his and may imply that some gyms hand out variations on their badges, that they're not all uniform. But yet another trainer in the same episode has 8 entirely different ones, and I think it's safe to assume that Indigo requires all the badges to be from Kanto to compete at the Indigo Plateau. And that seems to be a staple of every region. So combine all 4 of those trainers together, and Kanto has somewhere from 15 to 27 gyms. It's not just this region. Morrison proves that Hoenn has at least 9, and in Sinnoh there are several instances that suggest that there are other choices than the 8 Ash visited, and Barry and Ash's total badges imply at least 11. However, 15 to 27 is just a little ridiculous, and it's no wonder that the PIA cracked down on this in Pokemon Chronicles. But back to the episode. Team Ash and the narrator give a rundown on basic League rules and how many Pokemon Ash has on hand. Misty points out that Ash didn't actually win his badges and debates whether or not Ash's Pokemon count as being caught. In English, she goes as far to say that all his Pokemon followed him. And, well, fail on Misty, because lucky as it was, Caterpie was caught, and Pidgeotto was caught as legitimately as they come. Bulbasaur wanted to be caught, yes, but Ash still had to battle him and throw the Pokeball, and Pikachu was the starter given to him by Oak, who did not follow him for quite some time. Charmander and Squirtle were the only ones who fit her criteria, but insults aside, there is some truth to what she says. Ash isn't like conventional trainers, and all of his Pokemon are there because they want to be. And he's not a particularly good trainer yet, so it's not like they respect his amazing skill. They really are just following him. And isn't that what makes Ash special?
As far as the badges are concerned, he might not have won, but he may still have earned them, and Misty's got a ways to go as a trainer and a gym leader if she can't appreciate that possibility. But this is a point in the series where Brock and Misty put Ash down a lot, or rather, Misty puts Ash down, and Brock either lets her or supports her in a more reasonable tone. And Ash is being a bit arrogant about his two badges, so it makes sense. And they haven't seen the other polarity of his self-esteem yet. They haven't seen him interact with Gary. But Ash decides to prove himself and runs to the beach, trying to catch a Pokemon, and finds Krabby! They have a cute little interaction before the showdown at sunset. And I love Ash's creative ways of weakening Pokemon before he realizes that his Pokemon can do this, and probably should. But he does catch Krabby, only to find that it got sucked into the PC. Brock explains that this is because this is Ash's seventh, and he can switch it with a button on his Pokedex. And I'm so glad they don't do it that way anymore. It makes it too easy, because you can switch them out at any time. Now Ash has to go into town, find a phone or a computer, and contact Professor Oak. I feel that that is much more logical. And closer to the games. You know, if we can't catch a break and switch our Pokemon in the field, then Ash shouldn't be able to either. I also like how they're doing the Pokeballs now, how they don't just vanish like Krabby's did, but they just refuse to respond once Ash has caught his limit. But Ash doesn't want to switch out his Pokemon, obviously not having properly thought about this Pokemon journey thing. But it makes sense with Ash's training ethic. He's always going on about, you know, we caught a new friend, let's catch more friends, etc. So it makes sense that he wouldn't want them to always be coming and going, but here he can spend time with them and get to know them. After all, the humans in his life do enough of that coming and going thing. Dad. But Ash is a little worried about Krabby getting sent to Oak, as Oak is very odd and absent-minded sometimes, and Ash seems to suspect that he might eat Krabby, so the group starts trying to find a phone, so Ash can call and check on him, so Misty can find a bed and not have to camp out anymore, and Brock can figure out where the heck they are. Different priorities, same goal. And they find a lighthouse. Look at the Pokemon on the lighthouse door for a minute. There's a lot of engravings, including one that should in no way be on there. I'm talking about Mewtwo. The only people who should know about that one are the Team Rocket scientists on New Island. What does this mean? Does this lighthouse guy know something he shouldn't? How did he find out? Did he once work for Team Rocket? Was he a spy? Questions, questions, I want answers. But the lighthouse keeper lets them in after Brock promises to make food, and never delivers, by the way. And we see the inside of this building is very large and imposing and dimly lit. Ash is allowed to use the phone, which looks like a Bellsprout. There's a dubbed line here that's kind of awesome. You know, sometimes people get down on the dubbing for several reasons, some of them legit. But it doesn't have to be so bad. There doesn't have to be so much contention about the issue. And I think taking a little creative license is okay if it keeps the spirit of the show and actually makes the work better. And Ash deciding to call Professor Oak Collect totally fits that criteria. I love it. Thankfully, when they get through, Oak is not eating Ash's Krabby, but he does inform Ash that Gary also caught a Krabby, and his is, like, 5 times bigger. Gary's also caught 45 Pokemon, not to add any pressure. Oak praises Bill the Lighthouse Guy and encourages Ash to see what he can learn from him. He claims that Bill knows even more than he does. I think that's just a figure of speech, though, you know, being polite, though Bill clearly knows a thing or two if he knows about Mewtwo. And then they might know more about different things. Their specialities are in different fields. Bill shows up, stuck in a Kabuto costume, and seriously, I thought for a minute they were going to pull the genetic splicing thing they did in the games. Nice little fake out there. Bill is kind of an interesting guy. He's got a slightly annoying voice, one that will go down in infamy now that it's been mentioned on the fourth movie commentary. Interesting, though, in the games, Bill speaks in Kansaiben, which is the same dialect that the characters in Goldenrod City and Johto speak in. And Johto is kind of hinted to be the Kansai to Kanto's, well, Kanto, so it suggests that Bill could originally be from Johto, as some of his family is proven to be from Goldenrod in the games. You never know, that might be why they gave him that accent in the English dub, come to think of it, because he had one in Japanese, and if he's from somewhere else, that's kind of important to his character. And for a guy we never see again in the anime, we know a lot about him, mostly courtesy of Pokemaniac Brent from the Generation 2 games and all his calls with Bill Trivia. Oh, I think we know more about him than Ash sometimes. Meanwhile, Team Rocket is off being bad guys. We could take the road or risk our lives climbing the cliffs. We're the bad guys. It's gotta be the cliffs. And they do their motto in traditional wear, which is a nice treat. But back to Bill. After he doffs the costume, they start talking extinct Pokemon, and Bill says that there are over 150 known species of Pokemon. Yes, there are over 150. He has a freaking Mewtwo on his door. Of course, those are indigenous to Kanto, and there are other regions with other species. Why do they not mention this? Ignoring the obvious reason that the Generation 2 and Beyond games weren't released yet, I would postulate that the communication between the academic community in Kanto right now is a mess. You see evidence of this all the time. One scientist knows one thing that the other doesn't. One scientist claims this is a new discovery. The next episode, Oak's Pokedex shows it knew something about it all along. But when you have scientists like Seymour running off to live with the Clefairy and Bill holed up in a lighthouse, it's not too hard to think that maybe they don't all sit around and compare notes as much as they should. Oak does. Oak's pretty good with visiting people from other regions, but some of these others, man. You know, that, and we'll see as the series progresses, that Team Rocket agents are freaking everywhere, including the Pokemon Institute, and that may or may not add to the confusion. Certainly, they're going to be the ones discovering things, and then hiding things, and then lying about things in the name of the crime syndicate. But another big reason it might not have gotten mentioned, Ash has never been out of his hometown before, has never been to another region, has never even heard of the other regions. Shooty implies that he thinks all people from Kanto are hicks. Pallet Town, yes, but the rest of Kanto, I mean, it's supposed to be Tokyo area, like, you don't get much more non-hick in Japan. So maybe, you know, that's also typical of several other beginning trainers, that they're, you know, not really that familiar with the rest of the world, and, you know, Ash is only 10, how much geography could he possibly have studied? You know, in this scene, it's blowing his mind that there are 150 Pokemon. Imagine telling him that there are thousands, all indigenous to different parts of the world. Like, he'd just nerdgasm and pass out. And Bill gives the qualifier that these are only the ones we know about here, that there's still many, many more. And he goes off on this really cool speech about finding meaning and understanding, and there's always something new to look for. And you can tell it touches Ash, too. Team Rocket, though not in earshot, takes part in this conversation, digressing on a similar tangent. What's the meaning of it all? And it's not the first time or the last that they break off and look at their life and wax philosophical. Bill encourages Ash to keep catching Pokemon and learning about the world, but there's only one Pokemon Bill's looking for right now. Bill thinks it's the biggest Pokemon ever, that no one has ever seen it. And while I'm going to point out that there may be some discrepancy as to what Pokemon Bill thinks he's researching, either way, he's both right and wrong, and needs to get the heck out of that lighthouse and talk to some other scientists. But he has a thing for computers in the games, so I'm thinking he might have some otaku tendencies when it comes to socialization. Now listen to Bill's recording. Does this or does this not sound like Lugia? I actually first saw this episode with my truckload of siblings after seeing the second movie, so out of order, and all of us were flat out convinced it was Lugia. And then in the foggy distance, it turns out to be a Dragonite. This may or may not be the Pokemon Bill thinks he's researching, but it is a huge Dragonite, and a huge, huge Dragonite. And while other people in the world have seen that Pokemon, no one has ever seen one this big. And I suspect Bill doesn't get out much. He probably hasn't met Lance or any of the other dragon trainers who, you know, deal in Dragonite. So this may very well be the last of its kind for Godzilla-scale Dragonite. Misty thinks the sounds are kind of like singing, and Brock instigates a gym shipping scene, asking her to dance. The two waltz off into the background, while Ash and Bill are mesmerized by the giant Pokemon. Even Team Rocket is touched by the song, but not enough to give up their directive, and they fire their bazooka at the Dragonite, which causes it to get angry, and in defending itself, takes a swipe at the lighthouse. James is really interesting here, saying that he thinks what they're doing is wrong and he doesn't like it, after Bill's pleading with the Dragonite. James is kind of the moral compass for Team Rocket. One that tends to point northeast instead of true north, but at least he's trying. But Jesse's running the show, and so it's a good thing when Dragonite whacks them with his tail and sends them blasting off again. After that, the Dragonite flees, and our heroes are left pondering this until the next morning, musing on what was, what they saw, why it left. Spot the cloud in the sky, it looks like a Dragonite. But even if everyone has different dreams and paths, the goals are all the same, to understand and bond with Pokemon. So, Ash heads out, continuing his journey of discovery. As Bill points out, Pokemon live in more ways and places than humans may ever learn. A nice episode, though I'm still disappointed it wasn't Lugia. Thank you for listening, though, and next episode, Wednesday, is going to be quite the shocker. Seriously, if you ever wanted to comment on a future episode, do it for this one. Episode 14, Vermilion Gym, Lieutenant Surge, Raichu, what's not to talk about? But I'm going to zip back to the last episode for a second. I mentioned that the 14th movie that's coming out, and I'm so excited for it. I still don't know how it's going to work, but I've been perusing Junichi Matsuda's blog, and he does talk a little bit about it. Not enough to clear it all up, but enough that my interest is even more spiked. I'll be linking to the blog in the show notes. The entry number is number 193, but check out the other posts, because there's a lot of comments and pictures from E3 in LA, and he kind of, I don't remember where this is, but somewhere in this blog he gives the rundown on the Masuda method of catching shiny Pokemon rather easily. This guy is such a geek, I love him. But if you don't know, Masuda-san is one of the founding members of Game Freak, and he's done a lot of game development and composition work for Pokemon. Apparently, he's composed two different sets of music for the two different movies releasing on the 16th. Gosh, how does that work? Someone tell me! And I mentioned that it was not fair that The Legend of Dratini didn't get aired. So I'm linking to this blog in bubblegarden.net. It'll be available in the show notes. dogasu.bubblegarden.net, where he has reviewed the episode and gone through a large, very, very comprehensive rundown on why the episode was banned, censorship laws, TV censors versus, you know, the actual 4Kids censors and all these other things. Like, lots of things that I never thought about or, you know, never really gave enough weight to. So, peruse it and read it. It kind of, you know, gives another side to the whole censorship issue and, you know, why we, and kind of diffuses some of my rage. Like, I think everybody who kind of goes off into, like, a you know, blogging meta rant about, you know, dubbing is evil and censorship is evil, blah, 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 and, you know, I think this could quell some of the rage. Not that it, you know, says censorship's okay or anything, but it does kind of explain that it is a more complicated issue and you can't just hate 4Kids or just hate Michael Hegney or just hate America or something. That it is a bit more complicated, you know. The people at 4Kids have, like, the directors of the Pokemon adaptation in the U.S. have people breathing down their neck from higher up in the company of 4Kids, who have people breathing down their neck from the television stations, who have people breathing down their neck from their CEOs, who have people, us consumers who watch the show, breathing down their necks. It's all a very, very intricate, complicated thing. And if anything, it just makes me think that the world needs to be just a bit more understanding and possibly a lot more simple, because this is just too freaking complicated. It's a really fascinating page, and I really recommend that you go read it, so I'll be linking to that. But even if you don't go read any of these things I'm linking to, thank you so much for listening. This has been PKP Podcast, and if you would like to follow those links, or to comment on the blog, or check out screen caps, or follow us, or find a way to get to some of the previous episodes, you can do it several ways. First of all, we are on iTunes, and you can visit us there and subscribe and comment and rate us. Or you can visit our blog at www.pkpodcast.blogspot.com, where not only will the episode be posted and you can listen to it, you can find the old episodes, and you will also find the links to Videojug, where you can find the show notes, including these links that I'm to the various blogs where I got some information from, and screen caps, and some AMPs that I tend to make, the anime motivational posters, which may or may not be interesting to you. I find them fun to make. However you experience this podcast, by listening, by visiting, by commenting, thank you for listening. This has been Pika V Podcast. Gotta catch 'em all. And happy 4th of July. Pokemon, get to the bay!